Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem. Welcome back to today's Daf Hayomi, Maseches Nida Daf Samach Aleph. We begin at the Mishnah right on top of the Amid. Back to the question of a stain that was discovered in a joint usage area, a place used by three women. Who do we attribute the stain to? Says the Mishnah. Sholish Nashim. We have three Nashim lying on the same bed. Show you Sheinois, maybe Tahachas. So we have this bed situated, let's say from right to left. Right, the length is from right to left. And they were sleeping side by side along the width of the bed. Now, one side of the bed is near the wall, and the other side is away from the wall. Now, where was the stain discovered? We have three Nashim lying on this bed. One near the wall, one beside her, and one, the outer one, beside the middle Isha. So, v'nimtza dam tachas ha'mitzoyis. The stain was discovered beneath the middle one. Kula and tameyas, they're all tamei. Because it could have come from either of these individuals. However, tachas ha'pnimis, beneath the inner one near the wall, then it could have come from her or the one next to her. Tachas apnimis, shtayim apnimis, tameis. The two inner ones are tamei. But chitzoni, the outer one is free and clear. It's too far from her. It can't have come. It could not have come from her. Chitzoni to her. Likewise, tachas chitzoni discovered beneath the outer one. In this case, shtayim chitzoni is tameis. The two outer ones are tameis because it could have come from either one. So again, even though it was found beneath this one, but the one next to her is close enough, the chance it could have come from her as well. V'apnimis, but the one all the way inside by the wall is tahara. Ei masai. When do we say that if it was found beneath the chitzayna, the one all the way inside is spared? Bizman she'avru derech margolis hamita. That's when they went up over the through the legs, through the so the width of the bed. So each one sort of went up directly to her slot, did not cross over the other ones. Avalim avru derech aleho, or aliyah, they went over the outer one, over aleho, over the space of the outer one. So basically, they all traversed that outer slot. Kulan tmeis, in this case, even the inner one is bound by the stain because since she passed over that area, it could have come from her. Now, bodka achas mehen. In a situation where they're all presumed tamei until we can confirm, in fact, who the culprit is. Suppose one gets up and makes a self-examination. Bodka achas mehen, and his sister discovers herself to be toher. She's off the hook. He toher. And the other ones are presumed to be tamei. Shtayim atmeis. Bodka shtayim motzu toher. Suppose two women checked and found themselves to be toher. So they're checked off. Hein toher. And the third one will take the blame. Shlishis tamei. But if Shloshtan, they all three checked themselves and all confirmed themselves to be Tahar. So now we're back to square one. Umotzat Haris, Kulan Tameis. Because it's impossible. It had to have come from somebody. So, in a way, sometimes better is worse. The fact that they're all confirmed to be Tahar reverts back to the baseline, in which case they're all equally suspected of being the source of the Dam. L'madav HaTayim. What's this comparable to? Another similar scenario with a similar outcome. Legal tummy, you have a mound in the ground in which you know there is some tumor. Problem is, you got it mixed up with another two. You have three total. You don't know. You can't identify which one's the tummy. Shunus arev ben shnei galim tohirim. Vodku achas mehen. One was dug through and certified to be tohar. Motz u tohar. Okay, so that's going to be Tahu Tar. Ushnayim Tmei. So he's going to be Tahu. And the other ones are going to remain in doubt of Tum. Shnayim Umatsu Tahirim. Suppose they check through two mounds and discover nothing. Heim Tahirim. Shlishi Tami. They're okay. And the third one is presumed to be the one hosting the Tum. Now, Shloshtan Umatsu Tahirim. Suppose they checked all three and found nada, nothing. So now you think it's better? No, it's worse. Kulan tameim, because divrei Meir holds. The fact is, it has to be somewhere. So if they, none of them have it, then they're all equal candidates for hosting the tuman. You have to give them all a status of tumi. Shermeo Imra, as Rameo tells us, called something which has a status of tuma. It retains that tuma status until you can confirm where the tuma is. Until you can discover where the tuma is. Disagree. So in the case of the women, they agree that if they're all tahar, then they're all tummy. But in this case, they say, look, do what you could, voidig, dig through the mounds, dig down at shemagiyah lasel until you get to bedrock, or the vesula, or to undisturbed soil, and you know you're free and clear of any tumor, because past that point, it wouldn't be. Now, before we get into this discussion, let's just go back to the beginning of the Mishnah. We have three nashim on the same bed. We find a stain. So it really depends on its location. If it's found here, so those are tamim. The one further is tahar. In contrast to the previous Mishnah, we don't make this kind of a differentiation. We say, look, if you found dam, under any one of them, says the Mishnah, kulon tameis. And the obvious question is, what is the difference between the two Mishnahs? Mishnah Resha Delay Maflik. Why isn't that the previous Mishnah? We make no distinction. One stain anywhere affects them all. Mishnah Sefer Tekeh Maflik. But here, we differentiate based on location. Amar Rabbi Amar Bishlobos. The reason is because in the earlier Mishnah, we're talking that they're all sort of locked in with each other, all lying very, very crowded. In which case, a stain found anywhere in the area implicates them all. As opposed to our Mishnah, where there's some roominess between them, and therefore, we assume the one at the far extreme side of the bed has no connection to the stain found over here. But ka'achas b'chul. So, if they all three examined and found nothing, and then it's back to square one, they're all tummy. Just like in the case of the three mounds, which according to our mayor, would have a similar effect. We went through all of them, we found nothing, then they're all back tummy. What's the point of comparing this to bringing this analogy? How does it add clarity to our Mishnah? Rabbi Meir Rabban. This was part of Rabbi Meir's presentation to Rabbanon. Why is it? I know that you take issue with my position regarding the mounds, despite the fact that you agree with me when it comes to the women. They're all three presumed to be tahar. Well, then they're all tameh. What's the difference between the dam and the tumah in the mounds? Mishnah bedam ploy plagiso. Why is it by the women? Now you have no issue with implicating them all. U'mishnah begalda plagiso, as opposed to the case of the mound, will you disagree with me? Rabbanon, they respond. Huge difference. Mishlei mahasim ema erev natala. In the case where we checked all three mounds and found nothing, there's an alibi, there's a cover story. We can excuse it. We can attribute it to a raven. Yeah, there was tumah, but he snatched and he disappeared. That's how it disappeared, and there's really nothing consistent with your inspection. But in the case of the women, it's an impossibility. It had to have come from one of these three. So if it's none, then it's all. Here, where did dam come from? So here we agree. If they, even though they all inspected themselves, discovered nothing, they came up empty-handed. So back to square one. There's no reason to attribute it to one over the other, and they all tell me. Tanya. Now over to the machlekes regarding the tumah in the mounds. Amar Meir will support his position with a story. Masa, there was a story b'shikma shekvar saba, this shikma tree in the Kvar Saba area. Shem achzik matuma, where there was a known tuma beneath it, there was a caver of some sort. And they came to make an inspection, they checked the area and they found nothing. Yamim, turns out a bit later, a big wind came along across, they uprooted this tree, and guess what they found? They found a skull of a mace stuck into its roots when the tree got overturned. So what does that prove? That inspections aren't always conclusive. Amrloi the Chum responded, yeah, they didn't do a proper inspection because they couldn't get into the roots. Mishamrai, how do you prove anything from there to a regular mound which can be easily inspected. The Imar, we can say, like, but Lotar didn't check it properly. But I easily examined the mound of dirt. Why not? You check it. There's nothing there. Done. Tanya, Rav Yesi, another riot to this point. Masa, a story of Marshal Shechin, this cave in Shechin, Shemachzikim Batumo, where they knew there was Tumah there. Batku, so they checked. Acha Gilukark, until they got to the lower level of the karka, which was smooth like a fingernail, meaning clearly undisturbed. So they stopped right there, knowing there's nothing beyond that point. They didn't find anything. So they thought. It turns out a bit later, there was a big rainstorm outside, and the workers came running in for protection. They came along with their hose, with their shovels. And I guess the past time they were banging around and digging, and they started digging and cracking with their axes, with their tools. And guess what? Umotzon, they found machters, it's this hole in the ground filled with human bones. Umrloi. So what do we see? That inspections aren't always, conclusive. Umrloi. So the Chacham responded. Misham Rai, how do you prove anything from there? Perhaps they didn't check properly initially. But in a case where they checked properly, you didn't find, then it's not there. Tanya, comes another story. There was this hard, rocky field in property in Beis Chiron, where there was known to be Tuma there. And the Chacham had a hard time checking it because it was a large area, hard to dig, so they hesitated to go through the project or through the effort of checking it, but they still wanted to know. There was this elder Chacham there who advised them. What was his name? Rabbi Shua ben Chanan Yishmoy. Amalan, he says, look, skip the tractors, I'll show you how to do it. Easy solution. Havilu Sadinin, present me with sheets. They did so. He relayed sadinim. Okay, so yes, for sadinim, they brought him sadinim. Vesharim b'mayim, so he soaked it in water. U'personaleim, and he took these wet sheets and spread it over the area. And what happened? You see the ground, which had been dug through, is porous and absorbent. So it would absorb, it would suck in the moisture of these wet cloths, and you would see moisture in the ground. So ground which had been disturbed and dug and used to bury tuma, you see that it's now moist, as opposed to the undisturbed hard soil that's more resistant, it's less porous and not absorbent. It wouldn't suck the moisture into it, so it would remain dry. And that's how we'd know which area had been dug through, which area is presumed to contain tuma, and which area had not been disturbed and is tuma free. Malkim Tahar, the place which was tar, with no tuma inside, undug, undisturbed, is yavish, remained dry. Yochim tuma, the place of tuma, lach, was moist. In fact, they followed that indicator. So they dug the area which was moist, ubatku. In fact, they went and they found, discovered this pit, big pit, Malayat Samis, full of human remains. Exactly as the Zaken, as the Chacham, had forecasted. Okay, what was the bar full of Atzamis? Who were those Atzamis? Tana, we looked in the Rai, so who are bar? Shemili Yishmoel ben Nesani Chalolim. That was the bar that Yishmoel ben Nesanya. Filled with his murdered victim, Tchsiv, Abar Shesh, Lacham Ishmolas Kolbriger and Nashim. That's where he put the murdered people. Asher Hikab Yad Gedalia, which was struck by Gedalia. Now it sounds like Gedalia was the one who struck them, but it's not so. Gedalia Harogan. Is it so that Gedalia is guilty of doing this? Although Ishmol Harogan, Ishmol was the one who killed him, as the pasuk clearly says. He's the one. Ella, why do we attribute it to Gedalia? Because he's partially to blame. He's a partial cause here. Because Gedalia, the famous right tzaddik, Gedalia ben Achikam, that's right, same Gedalia. What happened was that there was a fellow Yochanan in Kireach who warned him that he's about to be killed, right? Yishmael ben Asani is going to kill you. And he didn't want to accept, you know, evil speech, Lashon Hara. And because of that, he was actually struck down by Yishmael, who eventually caused the whole, the incident and the tragedy. But Gedaliah initially could have, should have been more careful and should have been more discerning. He should have at least suspected that the information that was being forwarded to him had some credibility and should have taken precaution, not allow himself to be killed by Yishmael. So we partially attribute the tragedy to him. It's because he should have attributed credibility, some credibility to the advice, to the information being provided to him by Yonis Mekareach, the heads up that he gave him ahead of time, and he failed to take precaution, considered as if he is guilty for these murders. Amar Rava, furthermore, says Rava, based on this lesson of history, Hai Lishna Bisha, this Lashon Hara information, even though you're not supposed to really believe it, you're not supposed to be makabel, which means to say, you shouldn't believe Lashon Hara. But Meichash Lemeboy, but you should be Choshesh. It should arouse some element of concern in your mind, in your heart, and you must take proper precaution to protect yourself based on that information. In fact, there was another story aligned with this point. Hanu b'nei Glila, these residents of the Golol area of Eretz Yisrael, the Nafak Alaya Golo, the Koto Nafsha, the word went out that they were guilty of murder, and the authorities were pursuing them to punish them and to kill them. Also, come to Rabbi Tarfon, they approached Rabbi Tarfon for protection. Amrulay, they told Lutmarin and Ma, please, Rabbi, save us, hide us. Amrulahuzi says, look, this information that's being told about you, I'm not going to accept it as fact, but I'm going to consider it in terms of taking precautions. Hechi Navitz, and now I'm stuck. I'm in a dilemma. Ilat minchu, if I don't hide you, chazu yaseichu, the authorities will find you, and at minchu, if I hide you, but maybe you're really guilty, and I shouldn't be doing so. Rashi says, I'm allowed to save them from the authorities. Tesis learns a bit different. He says, if I do it, then you're really guilty of what they're suspecting you of being guilty of, so then I'm going to be the one punished. Already told us, Lashon Hara, Afgav, the Kabbalah, Miboy, although you should not accept it as fact, Miboy should consider the implications of that information. And therefore, look, I'll advise you to hide yourself. Maybe give them some advice where to hide, but up to that. Zilu, Atun, go, you go ahead, Timru, Nafshaychu, hide yourself. Hopefully, you'll be spared. Furthermore, on this topic, Hashem tells Moshe, when they were approaching Sichon, Oig, Altira, don't have any fear from him. The question is, when it came to battling Sichon, Moshe had no issue. When it came to Oig, Hashem had to assure him and comfort him. Why specifically by Oig. Michti, look, Sichon and Voig were brothers, Achi Havu, two giant brothers. Dama Maaz, we learned Sichon Voig were the sons, Bnei Achia ben Shamachzai Havu. He was one of the Nephilim, one of the giants that came down in the time of Enosh. So these are two brothers, same family, presumably of similar strength and status. So why was he afraid more of Oig than Sichon? Maishna me Oig than Mustafi. Why was he afraid of Oig and not of Sichon? Why is it that Misichon, the Lemistakomistapi, wasn't afraid of Sichon? Or of Yechanan? Moshe Rabbeinu was concerned about some element of Sechus, of merit, that perhaps Oig has, which will stand in his merit and protect him and make it more difficult to vanquish him. Or of Yechanan, Amar Shimon Yichai, Mitshivasa Shlosit Tzadik, based on the reply that Hashem gave this, that great Tzadik, Moshe Rabbeinu, after your day you can surmise what was in his heart? What was concerning Moshe Rabbeinu? My holy believer, Omar, Moshe Rabbeinu says, I'm concerned. Why? Shema tamad l'ischus shel Avram Avinu. Perhaps Avram Avinu's ischus will protect him, because way back when Oig actually helped and advised Avraham Avinu when he came to inform him that his nephew Lot was taken captive, which in effect was a Lashon Hara, which Avraham Avinu did consider. Mechashmi boy. Another example of considering the possibility, the merits of Lashon Hara, if it's for a constructive purpose. So when did that happen? Shenema, Vayavai, a pullet. The pullet, which is a reference to Oig, we'll see why. He came by Yagit. He came to inform La'avim Ravi, Ivri, about his nephew. Vam Rabbi Yechanan. Who is this pullet fellow? The Oig, that's Oig, Shapalat, who was speared, he escaped Midor HaMavol. He was spared the effects of the Mabul. How? Rashi says he ran away to Eretz Yisrael, which was Mabul free. Tana Rabbana. Beg Shoved by Kesem. So we have this Kesem of Dam Nida, which got lost in the Beged. How did the stain get lost? So Rashi says because the Beged, which had the Dam Nida, also got loaded up with other stains of kosher blood of Behemoth and Chayes. So now we don't know which is which. Mavr Olav Shiva Samimon Mavatli. How do you solve this issue? You take certain ingredients, certain detergent materials, seven in total, which we'll be discussing in the next Mishnah, tomorrow's daf. You apply to the Beged, and that affects a bittel. Mavatle ledam, says Rashi. So the cleansing agents will weaken, will fade the stain to the point that it's bottle, even if there's some trace of color remaining, but the essence of the blood is considered to be washed out and removed. So going forward, this beged has no tumah, because let's realize the kesem of an isha has a twofold effect. It's metame the woman, also it's considered dam tami, which is metame the beged. Once you wash it with the seven samimonim, it's considered null and void, and the beged is now tohar to be used. Rabbi Shimon Elazar Omer, you don't have to go that far, he says, take a close-up inspection, piece by piece, carefully. And that's enough to discern the dam of the isha. And if you don't find it, you assume, Rashi Tosfos says, maybe it got washed out somehow. Boidka, he checks the garment, shchunois. It's like neighborhood by neighborhood. Rashi says, every three finger widths, three etzbois square, so it's each section, three its boys, a shir or a beged. So you check section by section, and if it's not there, it's presumed to be gone. Likewise, of the Bashif Hazara, on another note, let's say you have a Zara stain somewhere on the beged, you don't know where. So if it's a worn out garment, we'll see in a second, there's an easy method to determine discern the presence by running the material against the sun. And if you can see right through it, then you know it has no zera in there. Otherwise, if your vision is blocked, then there's the zera stain. But if it's a beged chadash, more of a newer beged, which is thicker and more stiff, in which case the other method doesn't work, you run a needle over it, and you check if the needle goes through easily, then you know there's no zera there. Otherwise, if it gets stuck, there's your zera stain. Shachak, if it's a worn-out beged, but you check it against the sun, as we explained, Tana. The Brice explained the term shchunis discussed earlier, ain't shchuna p'chusim shalosh etzbois, shchuna is no less than three etzbois, meaning, so each section of three etzbois is meant to be checked separately, and if it's not there, then there's no dam nida, Tana Rabbanan. Speaking about a beged, a lost element, we have a similar story of a beged shored by kilayim. You have a beged in which kilayim got lost. So you had a wool garment, and there's some sort of kelayim thread, there's a linen thread somewhere in there, but undiscernible. So if it's a clear-cut kelayim, there's no issue selling it to a guy, because it's plainly evident to be kelayim. But if it's undiscernible, then there's always a chance that the guy might pass it on to a yid, an unsuspecting customer who might wear it. You can't sell it to a guy. Nor can you use it as a mat for a donkey, because eventually he might strip off a piece as a patch for his pants, and then he's wearing kelayim. And again, this is only concerned because kelayim is not discernible. But he could use it as a garment for a mace, who need not be concerned about wearing kelayim. Amar Rav Yosef, Zoy Semeres, we learn from here, mitzvahs, the obligations, including Kalayim, are not relevant when the Mason come alive. Otherwise, he's going to be wearing Kalayim when he comes back alive. Mitzvahs betelis. Mitzvahs become discounted. Lasid lovi. Amar le abaye. Yitim rav dimi. V'amar rav mani rav yanai. Didn't we learn that it's not so simple? Eshonu ala l'saftai. When can you dress the mace with kilayim? That's only during the levaya when you're eulogizing him. But to bury him, in which case he'll be wearing it when he comes back alive, l'kover, it's asur. Amar Lesi responded, Lavit Marlo, we explained on it already. Amar Rabbi Yechanan says, no, I feel l'kover. It's okay even to bury him in that garment of kilayim. Why? Rabbi Yechanan tamei. Rabbi Yechanan follows his own opinion. Amar Rabbi Yechanan, my dechsev, what is the pasuk in Tehillim mean when it says b'meisim chavshi, in the dead there's freedom, meaning he's no longer able to capitalize on the ability to choose and to perform and to earn. Kivim shemeis adam, once a person passes away, nasa chavshi min mitzvah, becomes free of mitzvahs, and therefore according to Rabbi Yechanan, he's not obligated to the mitzvahs in the Torah once he's meis. And likewise, even when he comes back alive, the chira and the whole idea of doing mitzvahs and refraining from avaris will no longer be applicable, which is something only unique and exclusive to Olam Hazeh. Amar Rav Papa, Amar Rav Chisda. So he quotes Rav Chisda as follows. Once again, we have a beged with some lost kalayim. Beged shall be kalayim. I have a simple method of locating the kalayim or determining that it's kalayim free. Just dye it a little bit. Paint it. Soivai, paint it a mutter. Now you know it's okay. How? We'll see in a minute. Amale Rav. So Rav turned l'raf m'rapapa. Manole l'sabaha. How does the elder Chacham Rav Chisda know about this, you know, possible solution? How to, you know, how does he know that it's a feasible option? Manole l'sabaha. Amar Leshi says, look, we find a precedent to this type of method in the Mishnah. Masnisni, this not Mishnah says. Let's say you have a mound in which you know there is some tuma. Check through it, and if there's nothing there, you know it's gone. Boide gachemagela sela. You check until you get to the bedrock. Vileka. Suppose you don't discover any tuma, which was certainly there. Eimar irnatala. You can speculate, as unlikely as it may sound, but maybe a bird came and took it away. Fact is, there's no tuma now. It's considered to be okay. Achanami here as well by the garment which had kalayim. Although you know there was a thread there. But once you do this test, that confirms without a shadow of a doubt that there's no kalayim there now. Achanami, amar b'kitna. Look, wool and linen, ba'adadi, loisalik lu'utziva. The tseva will not catch equally to both types of materials. Rashi explains that the wool is more absorbent versus the linen, which is a bit more repellent. So the dye will be clearly discernible on the linen differently than the wool. Here it's going to be, you know, a deeper, more absorbed dye, and here it's going to be more of a surface type of color. The kivan. So once he performs this test and he sees no difference throughout the entire, you know, cloth, that confirms that there is no kalayim amar. So you have to speculate minter nata, the thread must have fallen out somewhere along the road, and therefore it's okay. Amar of achabrei dar yeva mishmed marzucha hayman the rami chuta the kitna beglimei. Damo, a fellow knows that he stuck a kitna thread. A linen, you know, thread into his glimei de amar, into his wool garment. Venatke, oh, what I do? And he yanked it out. But he's not sure whether he got it completely out. Maybe there's some fibers left behind. Liyada, he's not sure enotik if he got it fully extracted. Liyotik or not? Shapri dami, go ahead and wear it, no problem. My time. Why? There's a safek kalayim there. The answer is, it's only safek the rabbanon because min haTorah midaraisa. Kalayim is only when the wool and linen fibers go through a joint three-step process, combed together, spun together into threads, and then ultimately woven together. But in absence of any of these three joint processes, it's only kolayim derabanan. Such as in our case, where it didn't go through all the processes together. It was a woolen garment, and then he ran a linen thread through it, or linen fiber. That's only kolayim derabanan. And since there's a good chance, right, there's a safek, whether it's there or not, safek derabanan l'kul. How does the pasuk describe kelayim with the word shanes, which is a compilation of three words? Shua, the test is tavoy, and the nun zayin is nuz. Shua means smoothly combed, tavoy we know is threaded, right? It's spun, and nuz means it's woven together. Shanes siv, achihi, shiyet, shua, tavoy, v'nuz. It's only kelayim if the fibers were joined together throughout these three steps. Rabbanon to Chazir Bey, but in the absence of these three steps, Rabbanon applied exera, they made it aser, such as in our case, but given lo idea in Al Kishari, but since he's not sure whether he completely extracted, it's okay. Tosfos has a different pshat in Shoah Tov Venus. Tosfos says that unlike Rashi, who learns that the Gemara means that the two types of fibers have to be combed, spun, and woven together, he says no, each one independently has to go through the three processes. So the question is why, in our case, where you have a thread in the wool, is only the Rabbanon. It was woven together, even though it wasn't combed and spun together. So he says, because in our case, it wasn't really a thread, it was just a fiber, a linen fiber. So that fiber doesn't qualify as a potential kolayim material, because it wasn't spun into a thread. So it's merely in the Rabbanah. There's a suffix, it's okay. Maskev lo Rav Ashi. How do you know you need all three steps? Emar, suppose we can say, oi, one or the other. Shatnes means one or the other. Oi shua, either combed together. Oi tovoi, oi nus. The conclusion is k'masotra, like him. The fact that the Torah expresses it in one word, shatnes, to indicate that in fact, you need three processes. A three-phase joint process in order for it to be considered to qualify as kolayim in atur. Tan Rabban, back to the stain on the blood stain on the beged. Tan Rabban, beged savua mitam mishum kesem, even a colored garment will be affected by a nida blood stain. Rabban Nosam Areisif Aymer, no way, ain't a mitam mishum kesem if it's colored, which makes it more difficult to discern the precise coloration of the stain. You know, even red isn't necessarily metami. We learned back when, right, that there are endless, shades and hues of red, and only certain specific ones, five in total, are metami. So once you're talking about a colored surface, it makes it for a more difficult discernation, in which case the Chum discounted the whole Tumas Kesem, which of course, to begin with, it's only the Rabbanon. It's only the metami if it's on a white surface, where it's clearly discernible. Shiloh Tikkun, in fact, that's the reason why the Chachamim established Big Dei Tzivayin Lish, that a woman should wear colored. Allah Hakal, the only reason why they did it is to make it easier on her. Allah Hakal Kismayim, to relieve them of the Ksamim issue. And that confirms that, in fact, a colored beggar is not impacted by a stain. Now, when he said Tikkun, they were Misakin to wear colored, what is he referring to? When was there such a Takana? Tikkun, my Takninu. Elosh lehutru, it means to say it was only allowed for this purpose. Something which shouldn't be allowed was allowed. Shlehutru b'tikzman lisha lohokal kismayin. The reason why it was allowed was to make it easier for the ksamim. What do you mean allowed? Hutru machlal da'asiri. Why would it be asur? In yep. It's not. In fact, we find throughout history that the chacham will misak in certain things, certain restrictions, as an expression of mourning for the various tragedies that happened. And there was a notion to disallow wearing colored garments, but they allowed it in order to avail the women to the kula of the of ksamim. In the snam of pomosh al pesianus, as pesianus came to attack, gozru ataras chasanim, they decreed against the canopies. The grooms would have these canopies on the way to the weddings, so they disallowed that in order to somewhat minimize these celebratory events by the chasanas on account of the churban. While the eris, likewise, they disallowed the use of a certain type of instrument, like a drum. And in fact, they wanted to add a ban against colored garments. Bigshu ligzal bigli sevayin amri, but the response was no. all factors considered, we have to allow it to Adifa. It's better to allow it through to make it easier for the woman regarding Ksamim, since if she's wearing colored, she is spared the issue of Ksamim. Okay, so conclusion. We start with the Mishnah, with the Yishalish Nashim, with that one stain. Who is affected, depending on the location of the stain, and the proximity to the women lying there. We spoke about a Bedika, confirming that a specific woman is tar, so she's scot-free. The other ones will take the blame. But if they're all three confirmed to be tar, now we're back to square one. We have to consider all of them as candidates for that dam. Even the Chacham agreed in this case, because where did the dam come from? It must have come from somebody. So until we can, you know, isolate it, they all have to consider themselves to be tame. This is in contrast to the case of the tuma found in the mounds, where Chacham would argue against Rav Meir, who says that once three are confirmed to be tar, they're all tame. He said, no, once they're all confirmed to be tar, tame free, we assume that the tuma disappeared somehow. The Erev came and snatched it away. However, the Gemara did bring three episodes which appear to support Rav Meir's Shita, which some of which was responded to by the Chachamim, that in fact, so the Chachamim responded. The first one they said, well, it wasn't checked properly, the second one as well, and the third one, actually, they did come up with a solution, the Sabdinin, determining the location of the tumor. We moved on to the sugi of Lashon Hara, that Gedalia ben Achikam was somewhat to blame for the tragedy that ensued as a result of his refusal to even entertain the possibility that the information that was conveyed to him had had some credibility. In fact, Rava concludes by saying that a person, although he's not meant to believe, but he's meant to be choishish when he hears something concerning. We had a similar story by Avraham Avinu with Lot, who accepted that information and acted accordingly. We had the Beged, Shavad by Kesem, so we had the concept of the Shiva Samamanim, which are Mevatel, the Kesem of the Isha, nullifies it and deactivates its Tumah. We had ways of checking for Zera. We had the story of the Beged with the Kalaim, fiber lost within it, be careful not to cause any Michshol, don't sell it to a Goy, etc. We discussed interesting Sugi about whether or not Lassad Lavi, there will be mitzvah obligations, and a chiddush that from Torah we need shua tov venus to constitute kalaim. The rabbanon even less than that. And in the case where it's suffered the rabbanon, we got the kula. Concluded with the machleik is regarding bigdei tzivayin, whether or not they become affected by ksamim. The halacha is that they are not affected by ksamim. In fact, the Ramah brings that a woman should wear tzivayin in order to spare ourselves the issue of ksamim. Surah Tevis, all the best to you, and atzlacha rabbah.